I'm Natick. My name's Leah. Welcome. I guess lots of people go to meetings in the morning. I never do meetings in the morning. I'm barely awake. But the fourth step is sort of interesting. I know we got a lot of stuff out on it now. When I got clean, we didn't have as much information. The basic text was pretty new, and there's no four-step guide. There's no it works, how, why. There's none of all that stuff, and I had a very hard time with it. You know, I got clean, and a lot of things happened throughout my using that where I had the inability to stop, and I gave up a lot, and I had a lot of guilt walking in here. You know, I got strung out. I had kids. I had them removed from the state. I had them put up for adoption. I had a lot of intervention stuff trying to, you know, help me get myself together. I walked in here with tons of resentments. I was, like, resentful for the Commonwealth of Virginia because they took my kids. They had a place to live. My kids were fine. You know, I was using, so they said I was abusing them. And, you know, I was on methadone. I was on a lot of things. And, you know, and I wasn't willing to stop using. And, you know, I came and I never came to Narcotics Anonymous and went out. When I was ready, I used to be on this methadone clinic, and they told me to go to Narcotics Anonymous. It was just starting in D.C. It was 1984. And I said, I didn't need any help. I'm going to quit using, I'm going to get off the methadone, and I'm going to be fine. And I did that, but I was substituting one for another. And I thought as long as I was just drinking, I was okay. You know, and the drink got so bad, I was like, shit, I'm going to wake up feeling like this. I might as well be shooting dope, you know. So I wound up sort of back in this spiral. My kids were already gone. They'd been removed, and that was a good reason to use. I mean, I was resentful. I had nothing to lose at this point, you know, and I could see myself just being a mess again and starting to chip away. And I said, you know what, I'm going to do something about this. And I called Narcotics Anonymous on the phone, and there was this guy, and he answered the phone line. He's still clean today. I still see him at meetings all the time. And I started talking to him, and he got me to agree to go to a meeting, and I was all strung out, and I had these, like, abscesses on my arms, and I walked into the meetings with my arms crossed, angry. And I stayed that way for, you know, quite a while. The abscesses cleared up. I came to meetings for about 2 months using. I got a desire to put down the drugs. He tried to get me in treatment. I had no insurance or anything, and he was like, let's get her drunk. They have to take her if she's drunk. And the other guy who was with him saying, no, let's try and do this the right way. And, you know, of course, I'm sitting there in the emergency room forever, and they're sitting there with me, and about 3 in the morning, you know, they said, are you going to be okay till they admit you? And I said, oh, yeah, sure. They left, I left. And I kept using, but I had this desire at this point. And I remember going to this meeting on Monday nights on Park Road, and he'd say to me, he'd say, how are you doing? Are you clean? And I'd say, I'm doing much better. I'm using less. And he'd say, don't you know Narcotics Anonymous is about total abstinence? And I would be, well, I'm doing much better, but you don't understand, you know? And I think this was the perfect guy put in my life because he had had an abscess on his finger and had to have it removed when he was using. And he'd say, yes, I do understand. He shows me this nub. And I would be like, okay, maybe he does know where I'm coming from. Because when you come in off the street, using, you look around in here, even back then, you know, people look good, and you don't think they've ever been where you've been, you know. They don't understand what you're going through. They don't know the feelings you're going through. They don't know how hard it is for you, all this shit. Well, one day, I just said, I'm willing to do what it takes. And this boyfriend of mine, he bought me a plane ticket. I went to my mother's. I detoxed at her house. I started going to some meetings out there. I got a few days under my belt, about 60. I came back to D.C., and that was it, you know. And I walked, you know, back then, a lot of us didn't go to treatment. These days, it seems like there's a revolving door in and out, and that's gone through phases. But, you know, I got clean and detoxed right in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I went through withdrawal, and I think anybody can do it. And I haven't felt it necessary to use since I put down. And, but I came in here, so now I'm clean. Now what do I do? You know, now I want to, like, go out and fix everything I did in my past, right? Well, you know, that ain't happening. But, you know, there's a lot of resentment, anger, and guilt living and festering within me. And, you know, 60 days clean, 120 days clean. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? Well, you know, I had these kids, and that was the biggest thing. And, you know, I had to do a lot of searching about it. And this is before I even got to a fourth step. You know, really come to a decision and pray about it. And, like, what am I going to do? Am I going to go try and fight with the state of Virginia and try and get my kids back? Okay, well, you know, I start thinking, then what do I do? You know, here I am. You know, I worked in strip joints throughout my using and my first year clean. And I'm working in these clubs, and I'm like, okay, I get these kids, then what am I going to do? It's going to make might make me feel better. Am I helping them? It was the first time I had to think about somebody else over the way I felt, you know, and really make a decision that these kids went through a lot. The son never lived with me. The daughter did. And, you know, I really come to an understanding that there's some consequences to my using and that I had to do something for somebody else and allow them to stay where they're at, and that the best thing that I could do for them is to stay clean, because at some point they're going to come looking for me. That point's probably now. You know, I mean, I've been clean, it'll be 18 years this summer, so my kids, you know, are 20, 22 years old. At some point, they're going to come looking for me. It's very easy. You know, my ex-husband, their father, called me about 5 years ago. And he was able to find me by calling information, because I've always kept my maiden name and kept it as a listed number. But anyway, when it came to the fourth step, we didn't have really any guides. And we had the basic text, and it was pretty new. Still talked about alcohol being a separate addiction. And I really didn't know how to go about it. Where do you start, you know? I was so scattered, so my first fourth step that I did was really just writing about my life and my past and the way I felt about it and really being able to share it with another person. You know, because I couldn't talk like this about all the shit that I did when I was using, when I was new. You know, there were a few people who knew what was going on, but not too many, because I was angry and I had my arms crossed, and I still, you know, it took me 6 months to even just be sure that this was the way I wanted to live. You know, and a convention did that for me. I went to the 5th ABCNA in Norfolk, Virginia, because when I first came back from my mom's, everybody was back here from the London World Convention, and they were just raving about this. It was the first time the convention had ever left the U.S. There's only NA in a couple other countries, and they were raving about it. I was like, I'm going to the next convention. If they're all talking about it for months afterwards, I'm going to go. And it was Norfolk, Virginia in January, and it was shitty weather. And I got a desire at that convention, because it was the first time I'd ever seen NA as a whole and really seen, you know, people sort of living this life. And I got this feeling within me like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And a real weight was sort of lifted over my off my shoulders, and I could move forward without always wondering if I was with one foot in the door, one foot out the door, not sure which way I was going. But you know, I sat down, and I had 18 months clean, and I really did a story, sort of where I came from and what I'd been through and where I was. But it wasn't really identifying resentments or anger or really learning to deal with any of this. It was more about, you know, really my story. And we had nothing to work with, and back then they used to tell us, just like with the first step, they'd say, just write about we. And then write about R, and write a powerless on each word, and write a paragraph on it. And that's how we, you know, really wrote about the steps. But I did this story, and I shared it with another person, and, you know, and I was able to sort of come to grips with it and really not be ashamed any longer of where I'd been, and accept it and say, I really can't change where I'd been. But it really didn't help me identify all the feelings and all the things that, you know, needed to be dealt with individually and understand them all. Well, luckily, when I had about 3 years clean, the fourth step guide came out, the booklet that we still have. And that was very helpful to me. And, of course, I dilly-dallied with it and messed around with it and all that kind of stuff for a while. But it was a summer, and I said, okay, I'm going to do this. Because I shared my fifth step, and then it was like, okay, now what? So I never really went on to the sixth step. And I went back to the fourth step, and I sat down with that guide. And, you know, people talk about procrastinating and being scared of it, not putting it down, and all this kind of stuff. And I did that for a while. But then I just came to a decision. I was doing this for me. I was going to reap the benefits of it. And I was going to give myself a reward when I was done. And the first Bahama convention was coming up. And it was in November. And I said, okay, if I can finish my fourth step and do my fifth step, I'm taking myself to the Bahama convention. I had no boyfriend. I was not going with anybody. I went by myself. But what I did is every night I came home after a meeting about 10:30, 11 o'clock, whatever, and I sat down there and I was able to, I tell myself I'm just going to write two paragraphs. And sometimes I'd write six and sometimes I'd only write two. But you know what? I did that every day and it did not take me that long. And it was 80 or 90 pages. And it's funny because I just actually came across both of those recently because I donated a bunch of stuff to the auction and I was going through my NA closet, which is quite a large closet, and I found the notebooks that I wrote in. I was like, wow, I should open them up. And then I said, why bother? It's ancient history. It doesn't matter anymore. Because one of the things the fourth step did is I don't have to dwell in the past anymore. I'm moving forward. And but I sat down there and I would write paragraph after paragraph, and I was looking for in his basic text before, because I know there's one of the things that the basic text talks about is that the fourth step gives us the ability to survive our emotions, you know, and that has been really the biggest key for me, because I can feel bad, and I've gone through, you know, I've lost my best friend in recovery, you know, died about a year and a half ago, somebody I spent so much time with, and, you know, I survived it, and I didn't always, because, you know, using or even clean, it was always about me, and how did it affect me, and, you know, rather than that, it's sort of like, you know, or why did this happen to me? It's always about me. Well, you know, one of the things I've learned is that it's not always about me. And that, you know, things happen, bad things happen to good people, life goes on, and you know what, I can stay clean through all of it. I don't have to like it, I don't have to be happy about it. You know, things happen, and that's just the way it is. It's about life, and I've learned to deal with it. But, you know, that fourth step taught me a lot of things, and a lot of weight was lifted off of me. And I learned that assets can be defects, you know, that they're the same thing. You know, me being able to be a leader and, you know, run a department at work or a committee meeting or whatever it is, you know, can be a defect if I'm just, you know, out of control, you know. And sitting down there writing the asset part was the hardest part for me because I could never recognize my good qualities and say, you know, some people are good at this, and some people are good at that, and know what I'm good at. And, you know, even today, I know I'm self-employed. And, you know, I was able to go through the fear of that, is basically quitting my job after 13 years, the one I'd had throughout my recovery, at least since I left a strip joint when I had a year clean. And I'd worked, you know, I basically quit my job and say it's going to be all right. I'm sure my bills will get paid and that, you know, I can go out there. And, I mean, it was a job where I had to get a GED to be able to take licensing courses because I dropped out of high school, you know. But it was allowed me to say, okay, this is the goal I want. These are the steps I need to take to get there. You take this test and you see if you pass it. And then you do this and then you do that. And then you pray and leave it in God's hands and things will turn out all right. And if they don't, you know what? You'll get another job. Right. And not be fearful that things are just going to spiral out of control. And I've been pretty good with that because my career choice, a lot of people get really obsessed, and it become, you know, making money, because there's a lot of money to be made in it, but money is not my driving force anymore. I have enough, my needs are met, I can do pretty much what I want to do, and I work hard, and I put one foot in front of the other. This is what you do, you know, boom, 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 it's all a process, and then you get paid. And you know what, sometimes you don't, but I've learned to manage my money, so it doesn't matter if I get a big month now, it's not all gone. I don't have to go spend it, and it carries me through. You know, but I was able to not have that fear always of, like, am I good enough? And I'm not driven, because one of the things that is fearful about that for me is that I would work all the time. You know, that you get sort of in this obsessive compulsive mode. And, I mean, a lot of people in my career are 7 days a week. I'll stop in the office to pick something up 11 o'clock at night, and people are, like, all over the place. I'm like, Jesus, what's wrong with these people? You know? And that didn't happen to me. I was able to sort of go into something, do what I need to do, and move forward. And all these things are benefits that I got from knowing about my defects and knowing my assets and learning to recognize them and learning to work through them and sort of live life on a normal, even keel. And some of the things that really tell me that that happens is I've been able to stay in a successful relationship for a long time. You know, I don't have the financial unmanageability because I always have to have more and I got to have better. All that kind of stuff. By sitting there and I really identifying my defects and knowing where my disease likes to take me, that I can sort of just keep moving forward with my life just one step at a time. And, you know, recovery has been really, really good to me, and, you know, I've been going back and forth where I have a lot of fear and lately, because I did all my using in D.C. I grew up in D.C. I did all my using in D.C., and I've had all my recovery in D.C. And, you know, I'm just not a cold weather person. I'm sort of really hating it, and now that I'm self-employed, I try not to work too much in the winter because I don't like to go outside. It really sucks. And, you know, as I said, I've been married to another guy in the fellowship for 13 years now, and he's really a D.C. person. All his family's there. My family's all gone now. His family's there, and a lot of the people that he got, that he used with, like from third, his best friend from third grade, that, you know, they went through everything. They're all in the rooms now. You know, I've got one person I used with that's ever come in Narcotics Anonymous and stayed, you know, that I know of and see. I guess all the strippers stay out there a long time. I don't know. But I don't see him. And he has never wanted to go. And I've been wanting to move away for a long time. You know, and the last couple of years, you know, the withers have been bad, and he's getting older and tired, and he's like, you know, I understand how you feel. And, you know, my disease took a lot of physical tolls on me, too, and I don't have any circulation in most of my body, so I'll turn blue when it gets really cold. My fingers just, I mean, it's really bad where they won't get warm. You can touch my hands, and they'll be ice cold all the time. It can be 90 degrees in the house, and I'm still freezing. And he finally told me this year, he says, you want to move to Florida, we can go. And now it's like, oh, shit, now he's giving me what I asked for, you know. Now I've been hammering him for 10 years, working on him every winter, you know. And now he's like, if you want to move to Florida, we can go. And I'm like, oh, shit, you know. So now I'm sort of working through a lot of fear again. I've said, okay, if I want to move to Florida, what do I need to do to get there? And there are some steps that need to be taken. I mean, both of us are self-employed. We both have to go down there with no jobs and start businesses over again. And that's all right, because, you know, we set it up so that, but there are some other things that need to happen. So now I'm sort of in the process again. And, you know, the fourth step is a process, and it's the kind of thing where you need to really, you know, it's not like I don't have fear in my life anymore. Fear still comes up. When I was getting ready to quit my job and go out there with no income, knowing that there wouldn't be any minimally for 6 months, and that sometimes many people who were doing what I did never make any money, you know, and I'd always, like, learn, you know, I had always been in a place in my recovery where I never had tremendous amounts of money, but I could always afford to go to the convention or the World Convention, take a trip, and, you know, that kind of stuff, and I was like, oh, shit, you know, and I worked through that, and I've learned to be able to work through a lot of things and basically say, okay, initial fear, you know, and then say, okay, well, what's the next step? And what's the next step? And what's the next step? You know, and I, you know, the great thing about the fourth step is there's a tenth step that hopefully keeps us in check, you know, as time goes on, so I'm not having to go into these long things. I mean, that booklet, I'm sure this booklet, this If Works How and Why, must give a tremendously long fourth step. I remember that first, the booklet came out, which is the one that I used and would use, because I think that it was getting really redundant. And I was like, I call my sponsor up and I say, you know, I'm writing about the same thing under three different categories. And she'd say, well, I guess you're being thorough then. You know, because when you start repeating your same stuff in three or four or five defects, it's like, okay, you're getting to it all, you know. And, you know, that was 60, 70 pages, the second one. And really, now I can, you know, pretty much at the end of a day or end of the week say, you know, this is what happened for me. These defects sort of kicked in. These assets came in. This is where I'm at. Maybe I need to keep myself in check. And I got friends in the fellowship, you know, that I've had who know me like a book, because I got clean in D.C. and we got, you know, I got a lot of friends with the same clean time that I do. And we've been through, you know, losing children, losing parents, you know, getting married, getting divorced, all that kind of stuff together. And they know me. They can call me on my stuff, you know. And so, you know, I have to say that the fourth step really gave me the freedom to know how I feel. And, you know, it doesn't mean that I'm always willing to be this perfect person. The defects are there, and sometimes I want to run with them for a while, you know, till I can't stand it no more. And then it's like, okay, what do I do about it? So, you know, that's pretty much my experience with the fourth step. It's sort of hard to talk about, not talk about the fifth step, but, you know, that's coming on. And really try and just keep it on the fourth step and really let people know that, you know, the one thing it's done is it's given me the ability to survive my emotions, move forward, take a look at myself, and know, you know, where I'm at any given time, and know that I can work through it and get past it and allow, you know, the defects and the assets, sort of like, you know, the defect is fear. What's the asset? The idea that possibilities will come into my mind. I'm not closed in this little box, and that, you know, eventually my fear, with a little help of a higher power, will go from one place to a place of like real freedom and possibilities being there for me, and that I know that no matter what I do, it's going to be okay as long as I don't pick up. I'll tell you one little story and then I'm done. When I had about almost 4 years clean, throughout my first 4 years, I really wasn't in a relationship. You know, I dated a little bit, not much. And I really learned the freedom, like stuff like being able to hop on a plane and fly to the Bahamas, and, you know, by myself, and figure that I'm going to be with NA and it's okay. So I learned a lot of freedom. You know, stuff like I'd go to a meeting, speaker would suck. I'd have like 4 days. There's one meeting, one day of work that I had to do in the next 4 days, and just say, you know what, I'm going to call in sick. And I'm going to find somebody at this meeting, and we're going to drive to a convention tonight in Atlanta, you know, or whatever, or wherever. And I learned this freedom. So here I am, and I'm very happy. I'm in my own skin. And throughout my using, there was always a guy, you know. I mean, even when I got clean, there was a guy who was not one of us who bought that ticket for me to go away, because he started seeing my using get out of control. He happened to meet me on sort of a good point in my using, and it was getting pretty bad. And anyway, he said, you need to go to your mother's? Here, I'll buy you a ticket, one way. And after about 60 days, I came back and I was with him. But anyway, I was okay by myself. And I was very involved in service. And I mean, that's been something throughout my recovery. So here I am, I'm good. I've got a bunch of girls. We run around, we run up to Baltimore, go to a meeting, you know. Drive to a convention in Atlanta, just being okay with myself, first time in my life, having a blast, saying that, you know, the freedom to do whatever I want. And this guy, I met this guy. And I met him at my home group. He had just gotten out of a halfway house after getting out of prison. He had 18 months clean because he had 45 days before they locked him up. And Within 6 months, we were married. You know, I was able to go there. And I remember this sponsee of mine, that the only person that I knew using, who I was sponsoring at the time, and actually still am, saying to me, "You can't marry this guy. You don't know this guy. You know, he just got out of jail. What are you doing?" And I said, "You know, what is the worst thing that can happen to me? You know, I evaluate the risks. Things don't work out well. And as long as I stay clean, I learn from it, you know. And I know that unless I get too deep in my shit, that, you know, I can take a look at myself and do this moral inventory on a daily or a minute-to-minute basis and say, I want to change it. You know, I can survive my emotions. I can change the way I'm acting, because that's all that matters. You know, it doesn't matter how I feel today. I can feel all fucked up. As long as I'm showing up and doing what I need to do, that feeling's going to pass, you know. I can want to use right this minute. As long as I don't pick up, it will go away, you know. And so all of that is what I need to understand, that no matter how bad things get or where I wind up in my little mind, you know, as long as I'm not acting on it and doing what I need to do, that's all that matters, you know. And I talk about, I go to meetings now, and I hear people talk about, "I don't feel this," or "I feel, you know, I don't care how you fucking feel. What do you want to do about your problem, and how can we help?" You know, when I got clean, they told us to take, you know, really, newcomers were not encouraged to share. They had nothing to share about recovery. It didn't matter, you know. We were not encouraged to share. It was very much a sort of tough love kind of thing in the meetings, and it worked very well for me. So, you know, I can feel bad or I can feel fear. It doesn't really matter what I want to do. And, you know, I've been talking about how I'm feeling fearful, but I've got a process in place, and I'm going to do it. And that's what's really important to me, is that, you know, I don't care how I feel today. As long as I know this is my plan for the day, this is what I need to do. And, you know, there are some days where I just say, you know, I want to, like, turn my head on the world, stay in my house, not answer the phone. That's okay, too. I know that as long as I don't use, that I have the opportunity to do things differently tomorrow. And really, the fourth step tells me, you know, gives me a little bit about my morals, what I'm willing to do. You know, I'm an old lady now, but I still don't think there's anything wrong with working in the strip joint, and except nobody would want to look at me now. And I have people come to me sometimes, you know, and they'll say, "Oh, there's this dancer, you need to talk to her." And I said, "You might not want me to talk to her, because I don't think she can go to work there. You know, you can stay clean anywhere, you know." In fact, this place that I used to dance was at 5th and K Street, and when I first got clean, there'd be 20 or 30 of us driving to a convention in Jersey or something like that, and they'd all meet there. And that was the meeting point, 6 o'clock on Friday, and we'd all drive off to the convention. So, you know, I'm convinced you can do whatever you want. Staying clean is the most important thing. And when you want to change, you will. You know, I'm not one that's going to get all high and mighty and say, you know, "You're a bad person. You're clean now. You need to change everything you do." We come in here and, you know, we bring ourselves here, and we all have our own morals, and I'm not going to judge you on yours. You know, that's the important thing, is that I need to be okay with the way I feel. And, you know, I'm not going to say you're a horrible person. And the best thing about it is I don't have to think that I'm a horrible person. You know, I've had my children removed. I've been divorced. You know, I don't do well with my family. I still don't, and I don't try. You know why? Because my family's here, and I get to choose my family today. And, you know, my dad is very sick, and we're not very close. I saw him a couple months ago for the first time in a few years. He didn't look well. I knew he wasn't going to be around that long. I feel very bad about it. I've never been close to him. I didn't need to come here. He's not the type of person. That's the way he is. I learned to accept that. I do not feel like I need my dad's approval. He came here, and he was very critical of me. And I sometimes think that I am the one that, you know, that I asked my husband, which is a sort of a check for me, because he was with us for a couple days, and I was like, "Was my dad really critical of me, or, you know, is this my skewed thinking that I always feel like he's critical of me?" And he said, "Oh, no, he was pretty negative." I was like, "Okay, you know." And then my dad had this serious stroke, and he's in a hospital and all that, and I had to call up there and say, "Would you like me to come visit?" you know, and do all that, because I can be a daughter today, but I don't need his approval to be okay. And I'm not going to be close with him. I'm never going to make that relationship work, because it's him. It's not me. Throughout my using, it was always me. I must have been a horrible daughter, you know, all this kind of stuff. Well, you know what? It wasn't me. And I learned all that, and I learned that I'm okay with myself. And my time is just about up, so thank you for being here, and thanks for listening.
Thank you, Leah.
Thank you, Leah. Thanks so much, Leah, and it's an honor to give you our second speaker all the way from Cincinnati, Ohio, and I welcome Tim.
First of all, I want to thank God. I want to thank God for this morning waking me up. I want to thank God for the freedom. I want to thank God for the opportunity to be able to serve, to give back. I'm going to have to call Tim B. from Cincinnati. I want to thank Austin City for inviting us down. Some friends of mine, we drove down from Ohio. Five guys we rolled down. I want to thank them for being my friends, man, and being able to travel over the highways. And just thank God, man, for being me. I'm a fool. First of all, I'm a straight, cold fool. I'm finna have some fun. I don't know. I woke up this morning, and I've been fortunate enough to speak at some places. Been real fortunate. And this is my first time speaking on the step. I get a lot of crazy different topics and all that kind of stuff. And the fourth step, and I called a friend. I name people's names. People say it's anonymity. You said, if you know me, I call your name. Anonymity is going on your job and saying, I send somebody and tell a coworker, I seen your name in that meeting. That's breaking your anonymity. If I call another added name out, I ain't breaking his anonymity. I called Kurt, my boy there from Dayton. I live in Cincinnati. They live in Dayton. And him and Jimmy over there, some friends of mine. And riding back over there. And the good thing is, it's some people that I met through my traveling in different cities that come to support me this morning in this workshop that I met. I want to thank them, too. Because once a long time ago, man, when am I coming to hear me? And this is amazing, man, because I remember growing up, I'm from North Carolina, I'm a country boy, born and raised in North Carolina. My grandma raised me. And anybody that wants to hear me speak, I'm a grandma's baby boy. That's my heart, my rock, my soul, my grandma. And I understand and know why I'm here, because she prayed for me. Obviously, I understand nothing that I did. God spared me because he didn't want that woman to suffer. It had nothing to do with me. So I understand why I'm here. What's up, Eric? Another friend of mine from D.C. But anyway, man, I grew up in North Carolina, man, and this morning I got confused about assets and liabilities. Kurt woke up, ready to go, boss. I said, yeah. He left the room. I laid back down. Rodney snoring, laying next to Rodney. He want to hang out. Like he's snoring in the bed. I'm laying there trying to say, now, what in the hell is assets and liabilities? I'm getting all confused in my head. I'm like, okay, now I got to say this right. I got to say it like this. I got to do it. And I've been main speakers at different spots. Not trying to say I'm all that, but I said, this is the fourth step. This is very important workshop. This is the fourth step. So I got to have everything right. Because I want to be invited back. I want nobody to say, who is this fool? And I'm saying, but I got confused about, I know what they mean, but I got real confused in my head this morning. And I'm laying there on the bed. I'm saying, I remember, man, growing up, I had to go to speech class. They put me in that special learning class. That the class was down the hall from everybody. Because I didn't know how to carry the number over. I couldn't reduce the fraction and all that, so they put me way down in the fucking hall. told me I can't sit around y'all no more. It's gonna rub off. and I remember growing up, man. Then they told me I had to walk. You know, I said, I was okay. I said, you know what? You know, Miss Dickerson was her name. I remember my name, Miss Dickerson. And I was trying to settle in to the, because I'm a class clown. I knew I started as a kid real bad. And I always been big for my size. So I knew early on that I had the ability to make people laugh. So I always, because I knew I wasn't that good in the education. So I had to do something to keep people off me. Because people used to get me and put me in a circle and have me to say words and everybody laugh at me. So I understood, man, that I grew up like most people on Bobo Brazil, Frank Train, John, do wrestling, love wrestling, Ernie Cat, laugh. This be my skates and all that. And so I remember she said, well, you got to walk down the hall, you got the whole so-and-so hand, walk to the lunchroom cafeteria. And I said, look, Miss Dickerson, I know I can't reduce the number and I can't do all that, but I ain't that damn dumb. I can walk down the hall. I ain't holding his hand. Now I know I'm a little slow. I'm okay with that one. But I would not hold Johnny Hen to walk down no hall. No, hell no, I ain't built like that. I know I'm dumb, and I'm okay with that. But I ain't holding his hand. And I remember, what I'm trying to say is, I remember she said, well, go to the office. Yeah. And that was my daily walk to the office. So I'm one of these people that don't believe in consequences, keep be clean, because I'm not afraid of consequences. What I'm trying to say, all my life I knew what I was going to do was going to lead to some consequences. And that never stopped me. Me, I don't know about y'all. And I'm sure that's why y'all sitting here too, for real. The consequence didn't stop y'all. So I ain't one of them brothers that share about consequences. I don't mind the street life. I don't mind being homeless. I don't mind abandoned buildings. Crazy it may sound, I'm okay with sleeping outside. That's how I know, because I done it. With the work every day. Now, I'm a working dope fiend. I don't have no jails. I ain't never robbed nothing. I robbed the girls. I stayed where I went in their pocketbooks. Just. I used to be a ladies' man. And I'm one of them boys that move in your house and don't put my name in your mailbox and take over your house. That's me. And I sell blood. Literally. But they call them plaza, but it's blood. Something like it's blood. It says plaza and something to make you feel good about yourself. But shit, it's blood, man. And I sleep with the man neighbor down still to get one more. And come up still laying next to you. I'm that guy. So I'm showing you, anybody out there, I done prostituted, done everything. Done fought my wife, done punched my wife, done left my wife pregnant, clean. Done been to the health clinic, clean. Done been fired from 4 jobs, clean. Done picked out, so I'm not sure if anybody sitting in here thinking that you can, I done served in the church choir 3 years clean with a stolen suit on, sang in the church choir. So I'm saying. So I'm sure to anybody sitting in here right now thinking drugs is not my problem. Yes, I'm just saying. Yeah, so that, look, man. Boy, and she told me, thank you. I was in the script club before I left. Thank you. Thank you. You just walk in there. Look, I'm 9 years clean. Never had an issue. Used to judge people about things. Me and my wife, I left my wife June of last year. Left my wife as I'm packing, she handed me a home pressing test telling me she's pregnant, and I still left. You could have never told me. I don't have no. You could have never told me the things I have done clean that I would do. All right? And my wife done lost two babies at 5 months pregnant. I watched my wife deliver two dead babies. And so, I'm fucking to the fourth step, and I'm going to share. And I'm no relationship. I believe in getting some. I ain't never had stain. I ain't gonna even try this stain from getting me one. I ain't know nothing about playing hummus and stuff. No, man, look, I like women. I ain't trying to nope, I'm getting me some. So people tell me, man, look, how can you learn who you are by yourself? I need for a woman to tell me about my, it's certain things sometimes a woman can tell you, your sponsor can't even tell you. I tell people, if you want to know how a person, you know how who I am, ask the lady in my life at the time who I'm really is. If you really want to know about me, ask who I'm with. Because I can perpetrate my sponsorship with my sponsor. I can play that role. He don't know me. He don't. Ask that old lady. Something about a woman, she asks you questions, the sponsor don't even ask you. Boy, y'all sisters, y'all got some questions for old boy. Hey, y'all got some serious deep make. Hold up, I'll get back with you on that one. And not in the basic test, neither. My sponsor asked me because I can read the basic test and I can handle him. But y'all ladies ask some questions that NHS can't even answer sometimes. But anyway, man, and I never had an issue, man. With script clubs or nothing. Never had an issue. I'm 9 years clean, and I've been hanging in script clubs lately. What I'm trying to share. I remember leaving, and from June, I got a new apartment there. A friend of mine let me move in one of his buildings, and God been good to me financially. I'm the guy that can't got clean, right from seventh grade school level. And I went back to school and worked on my reading and writing, certified training in my job field. I also been blessed. I own a taping company too. So God been real, real, real good to me. And I remember moving in and not wanting to face, because I had to do a four-step just on relationship. My mama died. Using May 1st, 1987, they found my mama dead. And you shrimp at your old man. And my mama didn't raise me. My grandma left me down south at 5. And my grandmama raised me, and I call her Ma. I just shouldn't meet in Tuesday, but what you did was saying later, talking about her, some family member. And this is what I learned, man. Sometimes, man, and I grew up knowing now that I had a love and hate relationship when it come towards women. And hate them in one sense and say I love them in the other. And I moved in this apartment, I slept on the couch for 4 months. Had the bed with no mattress in it because I didn't want to lay in that bed. Because I know me. You lay in the bed and you roll over and you don't feel nothing. You keep rolling over, you don't feel someone. Then you know you're by yourself. Now, see, as long as I'm on that couch, I'm restricted. I ain't got to roll. I'm just talking, look, man. I'm 6'5", 230-something pounds, soft baby boy, for real. Don't pay this no mind. I'm physically, I'm a man, physically. But for real, I'm a scared little boy. For real. Yeah, you can don't pay this no mind. I can talk with the best of them. Coming home from work, going to the right, and I live, well, she live. She live 5 minutes from where I work at. So instead of going to the right, now I'm going to the left, going to my spot. And some mornings ain't a good feeling, man. Didn't have to trust. We're talking about, it's no way you can do the fourth step without doing all three. My wife is pregnant. And I can't go home. I had to trust and believe that God going to take care of her. I had to trust and believe that I knew that a baby wouldn't save our marriage. That's why I still kept going. Even as I, even she said, Tim, I said, okay, I understand, know that. But this, I said, you know, and I'm talking about, man, because the first baby she lost, I made love to her, and I worked third shift, and I left the house. And 10 minutes later, she called me and said her water broke, and she lost the baby, middle of the night. So it's a scary feeling when you really understand that you're powerless. Now, I work in the health field. I take care of people for a living. Train in there, take care. I work in there, and since a lot of stuff. And I knew that, understand that I don't have no power over taking care of my wife with that baby. And I have to be okay with not worrying about being judged and criticized in the meeting and saying, Tim, how can you leave your wife and she's pregnant and she's high risk pregnant? But I said, y'all don't understand. I chokes my wife. I'm not going to stay married for y'all if I can call and come to a meeting and bail me out of jail because I didn't abuse my wife or vice versa. She done choked me further. They get that straight too. Look. For a long time, I wouldn't come to meeting and share that I allowed my wife to physically abuse me. I said, now what y'all see in the meeting, a happy NA couple, ain't what's really going on back at the house. And nothing against her, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful lady. But I learned, the four steps have taught me that sometimes, people say, well, Tim, do this step. Sometimes the steps tell you that the relationship is over. But the fellowship said, be patient and tolerant and understanding and letting go. But your step work is telling you, dear Jack, it's over. But little Sue's in the meeting telling you to be patient and tolerant. She can't keep a man. So you question yourself about your spiritual belief. Have I really tried everything I can try? Am I being patient? Yeah, Tim, you were 3 years clean when you met her. She was 6 months clean. You took advantage of a newcomer. Then I was afraid to leave because I thought if I left, she might use. Now I know I don't have that power, but I don't know. I'm not saying it's all ego and arrogance, but I was afraid to do that. Then I had to be honest with myself to understand and know why that I got married in the first place. I didn't marry my wife. I married institutional marriage. And nothing against her. I did evaluation. I don't have no kids. I make a nice little decent money. And you call it what you want to call it. I won't try to marry no woman with a bunch of kids. I want my own. I ain't got time to take care of them little kids that ain't mine. You can call it what you want to call it. I'm all right with one. Oh, no, because I'm old school. I believe in knocking them out. So I don't have no problem bringing the money home. If I bring the money home, you tell me I can't hit Johnny, I got a problem. I don't believe in taking time out. I don't believe in no 30 seconds. I believe in knocking them out. Now, you might say that's wrong, that's dysfunctional. You can call it what you want to call it. I'm going to knock them out. And you might say what you want to say and all that wonderful thing, Tim. You might say all that, but I believe in knocking them out. So, grandma knocked me out many days. And that has nothing to do with me using. I'm not going to blame my ass whooping as a kid. People kill me. I don't come from a dysfunctional family. I'm not going to insult my peoples, man. I'm not going to insult my family, man. I'm not going to salt the neighborhood. Everybody in the neighborhood didn't smoke. I chose to smoke. I'm not going to attack my neighborhood. I came out of high school with scholarship to play sports. God has always been good to me. I had the ability to play sports, man. So I was 3 years clean real quick. Had things in my life that I said I wanted. I said, well, the last piece left is a woman. And I saw that on my own agenda. And I said, she met the quartiers that I said I liked. I said, I told her, if we date for a year, we're going to get married. Didn't pray on it. Didn't ask nobody no experience. That was, I thought it was enough timetable. Woke up, it was a year later. Just like that. So anyway, man, and I love her. And someone asked me last night, and we get along better today. I'm not saying it's over. We talk better today than we have ever talked. She's doing what she has to do in her recovery, doing what I'm doing. And I'm saying it's completely over. But if it is completely over, I can walk away knowing I did the best that I could with what I had. I'm no longer, because I left before I came back, because I'm no longer worrying about what the fellowship thing. I can sleep and be okay in my skin. I'm not in the shame and the guilt. I'm not letting shame and guilt to rob me in the present. So the fourth thing I learned, man, that relationship, man, my mom, I grew up thinking something got to be wrong with me and my mama didn't want me as a kid. You stutter, Tim, you can't read and write that good. You got to take your time to go over stuff over and over. So I'm one of the people that don't believe in telling people to read your literature all the time. I sit down with you and read it with you, explain to you me who I am. Because a lot of times when we throw cliches at people and tell them to read this, because it's Tim, read this. I read it. It took me real humbly to come back to you and say, "Dear Kirk, I read it, man, but I'm still confused." I can read, but I can't help me. Tell me, well, who was in that? Don't tell me to let go and let God. Don't give me your experience with it. Don't throw cliches at people. Tell them, let go and let God. Tell me what that means. Don't pace an intolerance. When I want to come home from work, when I want to come home from a meeting, I want to go home, and my wife, when I sleep on the couch, I don't want to be bothered. Well, be patient. Let her go through her woman thing. You don't understand. That's her calling my name, make my skin jump. What do you do about that one? How many people willing to really share with you what's really going on between him and his woman? Don't tell me about all that spiritual principle shit. Tell me how you sleep on the couch like I sleep on the couch. Tell me about that. You patient with her. Tell me for real. Tell me how it feels to make love to your wife and look in the pillow. You can't even look at it. Ain't nothing more greater than love making. You can't even look at her. She can't look at you, but you're doing it through the act anyway because you're physically selfish. So you go through the act anyway. And that's why I'm not going back home, preacher boy. Somebody's going to get her. Somebody's going to get her anyway. I'm not going back home trying to patrol with no pussy. People keep me, look, if she's going to give it up, she's going to give it up. It ain't mine anyway. I ain't going back home trying to keep one of y'all from having them. If I go to jail, somebody gonna get it anyway. I live in Cincinnati, and y'all see Cincinnati on the news. I'm 6'5". Police come in my house. Who going to jail? Y'all don't heard about Cincinnati. And jail be a blessing with them. But how they handle us? That's outside interest. But but my sponsor had to tell me, Tim, for real, he never told me to go or stay. Tim, police come in your house, man. Look at you. They ain't going to ask no question. Then your ego and your arrogance, you're going to say, this is mine. And you know, you're going to get into one of them cops, and you know what's going to happen. Yeah, you're right. So, man, I'm here, man. And thank God, man, because I did treatment 3 times real quick, working for the city. I was working in the convention center in Cincinnati. I was to set up rooms like this, man, for functions and everything. It throws me sometimes. I walk in the convention center, work in a hotel, and people coming to hear me speak and all that. And I'm not physically, I'm just people physically watching me play sports, play games to come see me. Not saying I'm all this and that. But for a person want to hear me and see, want to talk about what I know outside of sports thing or outside of me fighting for you, people want to know what I know, it throws me sometimes, man. Because I just got clean just because last time I knew, Grandma said I couldn't come home. Yeah, okay. I didn't get clean for all this. Now look, man, I made a call home, and she said, baby boy, you can't come here. I said, Mom, I called Mom, this is your baby on the phone. This is Tim. She said, boy, you got that devil in you. I want that devil in my house. Did. All right. I don't use going to a meeting. I don't use treatments in the parking lot. I don't cut dope on these books. I don't talk on the phone. You can talk to my sponsor and never once relapse. Why I say that? I never prayed to God to help me stay clean. I was going through the most. I need a place to stay. Transit house was better than the homeless shelter. I won't try to stay clean. Trying to pay for I can keep my job. So I'm gonna want these brothers know how to relapse. I won't try and stay clean for real. Want no desire for me. I ain't made no commitment. I need to keep my transition bed. Sign this paper. They say get a spark. I'm just going along. I'm just playing the game. So I'm not the one. I'm not the one to holler relapse. But anyway, man, I've been clean over 9 years, man. And I'm here. And I talked to my wife the other day, and the wonderful thing about some things, she said, Tim, I'm glad that you left, because I see now that you had to go. And if we get back together, we're even talking about divorce now and not even mad at each other, because it might happen too. So the here and now, man, don't lie, shame, and guilt. Like I said, I done slept with other men for another piece, done fond of my sister growing up, all them four-step issues that I was afraid of. And I'm like this, dude, man, I just my personal belief. If it didn't kill you in the past, it ain't gonna kill you now. So why not share right on it? It's not gonna change 72 if you don't write on it. 72 still happened. But you trying to run from 72, ain't gonna go away because you don't write about it in 2004. If Uncle Jack touched you in 72, he still touched you in 72. So you not writing about it, ain't gonna make it go away. Dig, man. And I'm so happy to sit here, stand here, that I can look at people. And I'm working out, not every day. Don't see bees and hoes, and don't see white folks, and try to see people for who they are. And I work hard still today on that issue, because I'm a real prejudiced guy. I work hard not to see skin colors and sex. I don't like niggas. I like black folks. I work real hard. I'm serious, look, man. This is my current issue. I got to shut it down, man, because I can go. Thank God that five brothers can ride over the highway in the car and listen to Hail Melvin the Blue Notes. So thank y'all for inviting us down. I want to thank God.